Yeah, we're holding on Nu Namar Aleph, the second line. So to recap, we were talking about the Mishnah had said that a man doesn't have chazaka in his wife's nechassim. So we said, well, obviously he's entitled to nichsim, he's entitled to payers from nichsim alog, but why would we think he has chazaka on them? So we went, we discussed the idea that maybe he renounced his ownership of the nechassim, which he has the ability to do. Then we said, okay, but if he brings a raya, the Mishnah had said he doesn't have chazaka. But if he brings a raya, if he brings edim or shtar or whatnot that he actually bought it, then it would work. Then he could have chazaka. The question is why? Why can't his wife say, "I only sold it to you because nachas ruach asisi labayli. I only did it because look, you wanted to buy it. I figured it'll preserve the peace in our household if I agree with you. But I didn't actually really agree to sell it to you, and it shouldn't be valid." And we said, because we have a similar din, for example, that if a third party buys property from the husband and then pays off the wife for it, then it doesn't work. Mechid batel. We said yesterday, we didn't really have a chance to talk about it in detail, that Rashbam understands mechid batel to mean not that it's completely batel, but in the sense that as long as both the husband and wife are alive, then fine, the guy is able to keep the nechassim. But if the wife, if the husband dies or divorces the wife, then she's going to be entitled to take it back from him. He's not going to have the ability to say, but I paid you off in order to prevent that.
Well, that's not a
chazaka. No, never mind that. The point is, by the same logic as we're saying that that you go and buy from the husband and then also pay off the wife, nevertheless, because she can say, once you bought it from my husband, I was constrained to also agree for you to buy it, because otherwise it would cause friction in our marriage, but it doesn't mean that I really wanted to, the same way if the husband himself buys the piece of land from her.
What, he can say that?
She can also say, nachas ruach asisi labayli. Tosfos, by the way, talked about, we didn't really have a chance to get into it, but Tosfos talked about that no, it might not, mechid batel might actually mean the sale is completely batel, not like the Rashbam is saying that it's batel once he dies or divorces her, but rather it might be completely batel, Anyway, we ended up answering that Rabbi Bar Rav Huna says that no, that din about lokach mina isha because of a lokach mina isha is only talking about three specific kinds of fields. One where the husband explicitly wrote into the ksuba that a certain field was designated for her to get paid her ksuba from it. Mm-hmm. Number two is one that he didn't write it originally in the ksuba, but later on, at some point he brought edim together and designated one particular field as an aposiki, as something that she's going to collect her ksuba from. And number three, the girsa we have in front of us is Sheikh Nitsa La Shum Mishalah. The third one is Nichset Tzoyn Barzal, the property that she brought into the marriage to begin with, where the value of it is written into the ksuba, and the husband is entitled to the use of it as long as they're married, but if he dies or divorces her, then he or his estate has to give her back whatever it was, or if it doesn't exist anymore, then repay her the full value of it. So those kinds of fields then are the ones that if the husband.
So what's the chiddush if it's written in the ksuva?
That's the point. Dafka those three. What we're going to see.
If it's written in the ksuva, it's not a chazaka.
No. The point is, when we say that a third party, again, what are we talking about? You have the husband and the wife. Then you have a third party goes at some point and says to the husband, "I want to buy karka from you." So the husband sells him one of these three types of karka.
Right.
The guy then figures to himself, okay, but the wife is going to object. It was written into the ksuba or whatever, so therefore let me go pay her off as well a little bit so that she won't object to me holding on to it even if it comes to collecting her ksuba. We say that doesn't work. But the implication is other kinds of fields that would. Because it was written in the ksuba or later on designated or whatever, that's the point. Only those three. We're going to see what he's coming to me in mind. That's the first thing the Gemara is going to take up.
Yeah.
I should mention also that Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano a different girsan, the third one, not Sheikh Nisal or Shum Mishallah, that we're talking about Nichset Tzoyn Barzal, where the property originally belonged to her, and again, the husband has the right to use it, but he has to reimburse her for it later, but rather the third one is Sheikh Nisal Shum Mishallah, is that he has a particular field, which, again, so the first two cases are there's a particular field that he designated either originally in the ksuba or afterwards in the presence of Aiden. Or the third one would be that he picked by himself one particular field of his, figured out the value of it, and then wrote the value into the ksuba. So it's not the field itself, but nevertheless, because the value of that field is written into the ksuba, it would be a similar idea that she's. The idea with all these three is that she is particularly Slomach HaNod.
Right.
So in other words, the implication is any other field, not necessarily. Not necessarily would she be able to say Nachas Ruach HaSisi LaBayli.
Right.
So that's where we're up to. Second line of Nu Namar Aleph. So the question is, when Rabbi Bar Avohna is saying only those three fields, Lamo'otimai, what other kinds of cases is he trying to exclude by that? What other kinds of cases is he saying that if the husband sells it and the lekeach also goes and pays off the wife, that it would work? Are you going to say that Rabbi Bar Avohna wants to exclude any other nechassim that belong to the husband? Well, and in other words, that you, she should, since they're not specifically meshubad to her, then you should argue that if the guy pays off, you're going to argue then that if there's any other field which is not really so specifically designated for her, then if a guy goes and buys it from her husband and then pays her off also, that it should be mechay kayim, that it should be a valid sale. Problem with that she can't say nachas ruachasi. In other words, she can't say in that case nachas ruachasi to the baili. I did it only in order to preserve the peace in my marriage. On the contrary, if she were to not agree to the other guy buying these nachasim and tell him I'm still reserving the ones that are not specifically designated in the ksuba, all the more so there would be eva, there would be friction in her marriage. Da'amallah, because her husband is going to say, what is this? You're objecting to me selling some other property which isn't even specifically designated for your ksuba. It looks like you're looking forward to me divorcing you or me dying, and that therefore you're going to, that and all of my property is under a shibud to your ksuba. Otherwise, why would you be objecting? Mela, if it was one of these three fields, I can understand you objecting. But Rabbi Bar Avohna seems to be implying, on the contrary, those three kinds of fields, she has the right to say nachas ruachasi to the baili. I didn't really agree to sell it, but I just did it in order to avoid friction. But Adarabba, with any other field, even more so, there'd be friction if she doesn't agree to it. So it doesn't seem to work. So, okay, are you going to try to tell me then that Rabbi Bar Avohna is excluding nichsim lug, meaning that he would be saying that in that case, if the husband sells off some of the nichsim lug, which essentially those belong to the wife, only the payers belong to the husband. Are we saying that if the husband were to sell off some of that nichsim lug, and then again, the buyer goes and also pays off the wife a little bit, so she won't object? Are you going to say that that's what Rabbi Bar Avohna means, that in that case, mechay kayim, that's a valid sale? Which you could argue maybe, because you could say, look, it's hers. She wouldn't mind being moisa. She could say nachas ruachasi to the baile. She can't say nachas ruachasi to the baile, because what do you mean? It's mine to begin with. You have no business selling it. If he then goes and sells it, you would maybe expect her to object.
She could also say nachas ruachasi to the baile, because... Yeah, it's hers.
You can't say nachas ruach habayi on everything.
Not on everything. Nichasim alug, probably more than you would say on tzon barzel.
No, because nichas tzon barzel, ultimately the husband has the right to use them throughout the marriage. He owns the actual goof itself.
Exactly. And he has to pay back.
He has to pay the amount
whether
back.
Whether it went down or not.
But nichsim alug essentially belonged to her.
Yeah.
You would
and
say.
That's what she would do in the favor.
No, but
specifically because it belongs to her.
No, but then no. You don't expect her to be a doormat. So you don't expect that whatever the husband says, she's always going to say, okay, nachas ruachasi to the baili. I'm just
not.
So therefore, nichsim alug, in other words, since they belong to her, she has every right to be moicha. It shouldn't cause any friction.
We're not disputing that,
right? It shouldn't be expected to cause any friction in her marriage if she were to go to her husband and say, you're trying to sell off these nichsim alug, you do realize those belong to me, right? That shouldn't cause any Ava that she should be able to say on that Nachas Ruachasi to the Bible.
If it belongs to her.
That's the point. It belongs to her.
Yeah.
If
he didn't ask her and she didn't tell him specifically, you know, I did you a turn, then she would be upset. Because she knows it belongs to her.
But that's the point. That's the point, exactly. So therefore, if she's not Moicha, then it shows she agreed to it, because otherwise she would have had the ability to protect it and there wouldn't be any nachas ruachasi to the baili involved. That's the point. Therefore, so what does that mean? In Rabbi Bar Avohna's din, are we arguing that it means, again, if the husband goes and sells nichsim alug to somebody else and she goes along with it in the sense that this other guy goes and pays her off, that would work because the fact that she agreed with it shows that she agrees with it. It shows that she's not protesting.
Yeah.
And we would apply that in the Mishnah the same thing. When we say a husband has no chazaka on his wife's Nichsimalug, we would mean a similar kind of thing. We mean we're talking about Nichsimalug, where, and let's say we're also talking about, as we said before, as we said yesterday, that the husband waived his rights to them before he even got married. Nevertheless, though, we would still say that because ultimately it is her property, then she would be expected to be Moicha, and if she's not, then if he has an actual shtar, that's what we're talking about raya over here, if he has an actual raya, edim or shtar or what have you, that shows that he actually bought this property from her, then we should accept that. Are we going to say that? The problem with that is, Omar Amemar, but didn't Amemar say, hello, ish v'isha shemachru b'nichsim alug lo'osu v'loy klum. However, Amemar said a din that if a husband and wife sell Nichsimalug, what they did doesn't count for anything. It's not a valid sale. Now, on the face of it, what does Amemar mean? Exactly this kind of case. The husband sold the Nichsimalug. Later on, the wife sold them as well, in the sense that the buyer came and gave the wife some money in order to agree to the sale as well. And Amemar is saying that it doesn't work, presumably because Nachas Ruach HaSisu L'Baili. So in that case, all the more so then that Ashbam goes on to say,
after this point, we thought there was no...
We thought, we were thinking that maybe Nichsimalug would work. Because fine, okay, you know, you can't say, there's no reason to say Nachas Ruach HaSisu L'Baili. You wouldn't assume that there's any reason for friction if she were to object to the sale. Because it's her property, after all. She has all the rights over it. He has Paris, fine, but she has the goof. And therefore, the argument would be that if she agreed to it, then it means it must have been a full agreement, because she would have had the ability to protest without causing friction in her marriage. But you see on the face of it, from my main mouth, didn't that it's not like that.
So
that you do.
Initially, we thought that the fact that it's an aloof, it was known to the husband, and therefore it would not cause friction. That's what you're saying.
Right. Therefore, when he wanted
it was hers, if it was known to the husband.
The husband knew it. The husband knows what's next to the law.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And it would be expected that he would accept that.
That she would have the ability to protest it. And if she doesn't, then it's right. And if she doesn't, then it means that she agreed to it.
Right.
But now, based on our memo being on the face of it, we see that not. The answer is ki itmar de amemar hecha de zavid iumis afti hi iumamka. No, you're misunderstanding what amemar says. Amemar is not saying you bought from the husband and from the wife. When amemar says ish v'isha, he doesn't mean the husband and the wife. He means the husband or the wife. Meaning, what amemar is saying like this: hecha de zavid iumis. Suppose the husband sold this property to somebody else, and then he died. After ihi umafka, then the din is she is able to take the karka back from the people who bought it. Says that's what Amemar is telling us. Because and the logic is the husband was only able to sell the payrus for the husband only owned, as long as they're still married, the husband only has the payrus. If his wife dies first, then fine, he yarshins, so he gets the goof also. But if he dies or he divorces her, then she's going to get her nichsimalug. So therefore, that's what we're saying. In other words, if the husband, that's what Amemar is telling us, that if the husband were to sell these nichsimalug, but the wife wasn't involved in the sale, only the husband sold it unilaterally, then fine, it exists as a sale as long as he's alive, because as long as he and his wife are still married, because fine, he's entitled to the payrus, so fine, he sold the payrus to somebody else, that's fine. But if he dies, which at that point, the wife gets back the goof, then she gets back the goof, as well as any payrus from now on. He has to give it back to her, right. It's actually machlok, because we're showing him whether she has to reimburse him the amount he paid for it. But anyway, yeah.
So the
mekach is bottle in that sense, right? Or say what? Unilaterally means all by himself, meaning without her being involved. Yeah.
So Amemar can't dissent with Rabbi Baruch Huna.
This din that Amemar is saying, nobody disagrees with. So if you're going to say that Rabbi Baruch Huna means that, you would have to explicitly say that he's disagreeing with Amemar, and he doesn't seem to be. Because we don't see that he's saying any such thing. You'd be expected that one or the other of them should mention that you should know. We're arguing with each other. They don't mention it. The din of Amemar is an accepted din. So therefore, yeah. Sometimes it's true. Usually we say, like we said the other day, Gabra Gabra Karamis. You can't have one. You can't ask a question. One Amorda says one thing. The other one says something else. Big deal. Amorda are allowed to argue. But sometimes you have something which is so well accepted That's something which is so well accepted. Or sometimes also you have an amora who has tremendous authority, like Rav or Shmuel or whatever, where, yes, we can use that as a basis to argue against somebody else. Here it's not so much a Maimer's authority. A Maimer is actually later than Rav about Rav Huna, I think. But it's the fact that his din is accepted without any dissension. Yes. Okay. Or Ati Iyu Maka, or vice versa. Inami Zabne Iyu Umesa, or vice versa. What a Maimer means is he's telling us the din. What if the other way around? What if the wife goes and sells the goof of the karka, which, fine, she can't sell the payrus, the husband is entitled to the payrus, but she goes and sells the actual karka with the understanding that if he dies, then the guy will be entitled to the goof of the karka, fine, but if she dies first. If she dies first, then the husband is entitled to take it back. Also, iu mafik, then the husband is able to take that back from the lekeach, the takana of the rabbanon, based on the takana of the rabbanon, namely the chidur of Yesu ben Chanina. That takana is the one that Rabbi Yesu ben Chanina said. The Amr of Yesu ben Chanina, but Usha hiskinu. They made a takana in Usha, which is one of the places where the Sanhedrin was located in the decades after the Churban. It's in the north of Eretz Yisrael in the Galil. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that there were 10 places where the Sanhedrin went into Golus. They started out in the Lushkas of Golus. First, they moved to Chanuyos, some area on the Harabayis, 40 years before the Churban. Then later on, they moved into Yerushalayim itself, then to Yavne, then to Usha, etc. They moved around from one place to another because of the Romans and whatever. Yeah. But they were actually in Usha in two different periods. Anyway, during one of those periods, when they were in Usha, they made a takana for Isha Shemachra B'nichsa Malug Umesa. If a wife sells some of her nichsa malug, and later on she dies, habal motzi miyad alakuchas. The husband is entitled to take it back from the buyers, because the Rashbam quotes from the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which discusses this, that the reason is the Chachamim, precisely for this reason of Eva that we were talking about before, to avoid friction, the Chachamim made the husband, even though he's only entitled to the peiros, as long as she's alive, they made him be considered lekeach rishon, as if he's the first buyer of the property. Therefore, if she dies and she meanwhile had sold it to somebody else, fine, but I'm the first buyer, you're only the second buyer, I override you. And therefore, you can take it back from her, and therefore, you can take it back from those Lakokas and Yashinet. So that's what a Maimar is saying, that if it's one or the other of them who sold it, not if both of them jointly sold it. But you could very well say, Ameima means that if both of them sold it, which is the case that we're talking about, La'alma, namely that if both of them sold it together jointly to a third party, so he sold the payrus, she sold the goof, that could work.
Yeah, but obviously there's no if on this case.
No, well, that's...
If they're agreeable both together, one to group,
we
one
thought,
to...
We thought that Ameima was saying there is Eva,
right,
in that case,
sure.
That she could say Nachas Ruach,
but Ameima was not...
Now we're saying that. No, that's not what Ameima is saying, right.
Well,
it has to be. I mean, he only gets the payrus. He only has the payrus as long as they're married. She only has the goof as long as they're married. So, yeah, of necessity, each one can only sell what they themselves have.
Right. But the package,
they're selling it as a package deal. Yeah.
So the mikvah would work.
That's what we're saying. Inami zabne ihilidide, or the case which we're trying to figure out in our Mishnah. In other words, this case that we just mentioned, where both of them sell it to a third party, that's the case that Rabbi Bar Avuna is explaining the Mishnah in Gittin. We say over there, lokach mina ish, because of a lokach mina isha, you bought from the husband, later on you also bought it, you also bought off the wife by paying her off. We're saying, the Mishnah had said over there, mechled bottle, that the sale is valid. Now we're saying that Rabbi Bar Avuna, based on how we're understanding a Maimer now, is modifying that. He says that din only applies to the din of that Mishnah in Gittin. It applies to the three types of fields that he designated for payment of Ruksova, the three that we listed before, as well as any other Nechasim that belong to him, because again, Nachas Ruach HaFisa Levayli, but it does not apply to Nichsim Alug, namely, exactly that. If somebody goes and buys Nichsim Alug from the husband, buying the payrus, then he goes to the wife and buys the guf, fine, Mecha Kayim, it's a valid Mecha. That's what Rabbi Bar Avuna means. And in terms of our Mishnah, when our Mishnah is talking about that the husband can't have Chazaka on his wife's Nechasim, but he's able to have a raya if he has a shtar or edim on his wife's nechasim, that does work. Same kind of thing. Inami zabne ihi lididei. if the wife goes and sells her portion of the nechse melug, namely the guf of it, to her husband. Zvine zvini. That is a valid sale. You can't say nachas ruach hasisu labayli, because again, given that the nechse melug belongs to her, there's no reason if the husband were to one day come to her and say, you know, I have to pay this already, I'd like to have the guf also. She would have every right to tell him, I'm sorry, I want to keep the guf for myself. That wouldn't cause any friction. That wouldn't cause any eva. And there's no reason to say if she doesn't, because they belong to her, yeah. Therefore, there wouldn't be, if she would agree to it, she can't afterwards say, okay, nachas ruach hasisu labayli. Therefore, such a thing works.
Nadide
means to him. To him himself. To him, meaning the husband.
So that's obvious.
Well, that's what those are the two cases that we're talking about. Again, one is where the nechse melug are sold to a third party. The husband sells his portion. Right. The wife sells her portion. The other is where she sells her portion of nechse melug to her husband, where he already has the keiros, and now he's going to have the guf as well. Fine, we're saying now, not like our original understanding about Meimor, that doesn't work. That does work. She can't afterwards say nachas ruach hasisu labayli. It is a valid sale. That's what our Mishnah is implying then. That if the husband later on pulls out that shtar or edim to say that that's what happened, good. Then he has
excluding,
in other words, the various other cases that we talked about before. But yeah, then that works. That confirms his ownership of the place. She can't afterwards say, okay, you have a shtar, you have edim, I only did it because nachas ruach. No, we don't accept nachas ruach hasisu labayli in a case like that.
Not because of the shtar.
Because lahatchila, when she sold it to him, she must have agreed to it. Otherwise, she would have had the ability to say, no, I don't want to sell it to you without that causing eva. The premise that we're talking about over here is in some cases, where if she would disagree with what her husband wants to do, it would cause eva. But this case of her husband wanting to buy the guf of the nechse melug from her is not one of those cases. Or where the husband wants to sell the payrus of a nechse melug, and she wants to sell the guf. Again, neither of those cases is there eva, no nachas ruach hasisu labayli, no nachas ruach hasisu labayli means it's a valid sale. Okay. The iba is same. Or another way you can answer this whole thing, you could say, maybe indeed you could say that a Meimar is not necessarily agreeing with Rava Bar Rav Huna, but you could say that a Meimar is talking according to a different Tana. You could say, in other words, there is a machlokas tanoim. You could say there is a machlokas tanoim over here. So again, you have Rava Bar Rav Huna explaining a Mishnah in Gittin. You have a Meimar whose din has to somehow fit with our Mishnah. You could say that Amnema is saying his din according to one Tana, whereas Rava Bar Rav Huna would be explaining the din in Gittin according to a different Tana. So let's say indeed you have a case where you bought Nechasim from the husband, and then afterwards you also bought them from the wife, regardless whether we're talking Nechasim Malug or whatever kind over here. So we could say that Amnema does actually mean Ish V'Isha. That he actually does mean, as we thought originally, that it means both the husband and the wife sold. And we're saying that loyos of loyklum. So what about our Mishnah, which implies that it is valid, that there is a valid way in which the husband is able to own those nechassim? So we're saying that you could argue that a Meimar goes like Rabbi Lazar, as we're going to discuss now, whereas we would say that our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim. So therefore, no contradiction. What is that case of Rebbe Lazar? We both say, "Amei medavak Rebbe Lazar." The Tanya. We learn in a Braisa as follows. Now, as background to this din, we learned in Rav Kama, the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that if a person hits his eved and he dies, knock him, the person is put to death just as if he killed a regular Ben Yisrael. However, achim yoyma yemayim yamod. However, the pasuk continues: if the eved survives for yoyim or yemayim. And Tosfos mentions over here, Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there, based on the Mechilta, that Yoim O Yomayim literally means one day or 2 days. But obviously, if one day is enough, then 2 days for sure is enough.
3 days. Good point.
Then right. So Rashi explains on the pasuk over there, based on the Mechilta, Yoim O Yomayim means 24 hours. If the Eved survives 24 hours after the beating, then the pasuk says lo yukam, then he's not avenged, meaning the master is not put to death. He casts for you because after all, the Eved is his possession. In other words, a person has a right to hit his eved when necessary. So if it wasn't a strong enough beating that he died within 24 hours, then you can't consider him guilty of ritzicha. So
So Yom Yomayim is 24
means 24 hours.
Hours.
That's how Rashi explains it on the Pasuk from the book.
Because
it means Yom. Yes, because Yom or Yomayim means Ezer or Yom Shehu Yomayim. How do you have one day, which can be the equivalent of 2 days, is 24 hours, where it spreads out over two calendar days.
When you say that it's a crime, is a crime within 24 hours and within after.
So with a regular. So with a regular Ben Yisrael, that wouldn't work. And we're going to see in this Brais over here that maybe even with an Eved, it doesn't always work. It only, first of all, it only works with your Eved. It only works with your Eved. So we're going to see now in the Brais what is needed to define him as your Eved.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work with somebody else's Eved. It wouldn't work with a regular Ben Yisrael. That they are, no matter how long the guy lingers afterwards. And the Rambam actually adds another interesting detail as well. The Rambam says, if you look in the Pasuk, it describes over there that the guy, the Chiyaka Ishis Abda Eretz Amasa Bashevet, he hits them with a stick, implying that's not something that could normally be expected to kill.
No.
So therefore, if somehow it ended up that it made the guy so ill that eventually more than 24 hours later he died, fine, then you pass it. But on the other hand, the Rambam says, let's say, for example, you were to hit him with a sword or with a weapon or something,
yeah.
Then the Rambam says it doesn't matter. The guy can live months afterwards, and you're still chayv mitzvah.
What's the difference?
Because the difference is one is something
because one is something
normal to hit an eved with, and the other one is not.
Depends how thick is the stick.
We're talking about the normal kind of stick. I guess we're not talking about baseball bat. Come on. Okay.
Dominic, you're lucky that I don't discipline the sword.
Okay. Onward. So the din is if somebody sells his eved, but he made a deal that the deal was that this eved is going to continue working for the original master for the next 30 days. So from now, it's now Rosh Chodesh Nissan, I'm selling you this eved. Throughout the whole month of Nissan, I'm still retaining the right to have him work for me. After that, beginning from Rosh Chodesh Iyar, he's fully yours. What happens now if one of them hits him in that way during those 30 days during the month of Nisan? What happens? Rameir says in that case, the first one has the tour of Yoima Yemayim. That as long as the Eved survives the beating by 24 hours,
the original owner, the seller.
Has the din of Yoma Yemayim, Mipneshu Tachtav, because the Eved at this point is still considered for those 30 days to be his. Now the Pasuk says, that's the point, because he reserved the right to continue using him for the next 30 days. And now the Pasuk uses the expression, Umeis Tachat Yodah, that the Eved died under his hand, which implies, and one of the implications of the simple meaning of Tachat Yodah is he died because of the beating. But we also understand it to mean that the Eved has to be one who is tachas yadeh, one who is under your control, under your ownership. Because Rameir holds, he's still considered to be under your ownership during that 30 days, because you reserve the rights to have him continue working for you. But the second one does not have that patur of Yoma Yemayim. If the second one were to beat him during that month, even if the Eved lingers for a week, 2 weeks, however long, the guy and eventually dies, the guy will still be chayek misa. He doesn't have the tour of Yoma Yemayim, because this Eved is not considered to be under the ownership of the second one yet. Which means, therefore, the Gemara interjects into the Braisa, Kasava, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Agufdom, which means that Rameir holds that when you own the Peres of something, and in this case, that's and that's the first one, because he owns the Peres right now. Kinyan Agufdom, that is considered the equivalent of owning his Guf. So therefore, the one who has the payrus has the goof. The one who doesn't have the payrus doesn't have the goof. Therefore, only the first one can be called the master at this point, not the second one.
But the Torah,
we attach conditions, right? Or Goyal Adam kills a Ritzeach Mishgaga, Beis Din has a mitzvah to execute a person who's Chayav Misa. We talked about the other day, right? Loi Tirzah, but there's a break between them. We talked about on Shabbos, what Rabbi Yaakov Emden quoted from the Zohar, that there are exceptions to Loi Tirzah, Loi Tinah, and Loi Tigna again. So, okay, but this is part of the exception. The Torah carves out this exception that there's this Yoma Yemayim in the case of an Eved. Okay, that's one opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hasheni Yeshne Medina. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Hasheni Yeshne Medina Yoma Yemayim. Just the opposite. The second one has the din of Yoma Yemayim during that month. Mipnei Shehu Kaspoi, because Rav Meir looks at a different detail, the pasuk finishes off and saying, why are you potter with Yoyma Yemayim Ki Kaspoi Hu? Because the Eved is your kesef, he's your possession. Rav Yehuda takes the view, okay, the Eved is your possession at this point, you paid money for him, you were koine him, you're not entitled to his payrus, you're not entitled to his work during that month, right. but you own his actual goof during that month. Right. Therefore, you're considered the second one is considered the owner. The first one does not have the Yoyma Yemayim Ptur. Again, if the first one were to hit the Eved and he dies even a long time later, the first one, according to Yehuda, would be Chayiv. Because at this point, the Eved is not the Kesef. He's not the owner. He's not the possession of the first one anymore. Which means Kasava Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Agoktami, which shows that Rabbi Yehuda holds the opposite of Rabbi Meir, that just because you have the Peres is not considered that you own the goof. Therefore, the first one only has the Peres. That's it. He only has the Peres, not the goof. He can't be considered the master. The second one. No. We haven't gotten to Rabbi Elazar yet. We're going to get to Rabbi Elazar soon, right? And then see how that fits with this. First, we have four different opinions over here.
Yeah,
we have Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Yossi says that both of them have the din of Yoyma Yemayim. In other words, both of them would be either one, if they were to hit him, would be potter if the Eved lasts for more than 24 hours. Because basically, you have a suffix over here. Zemipnei Shehu Tachtav, Zemipnei Shehu Kasva, because he's Tachtav, he's working for the one, but he's the Kesef of the other one, or Mesap Galei, and Rabbi Yossi has a suffix. Ikinin Peres HaKikinin HaGufdomi, Yilav Kikinin HaGufdomi. Okay, Rabbi Yossi has a suffix, whether Kinyan Peres HaKikinin HaGuf or not, whether it's considered Kinyan HaGuf or not, and therefore, so the Rashbam says, look, if it's a suffix Nefashis, then you can't. The Shoftua Eda Vitzilua Eda, the Beis Din is responsible for finding every possible way to pastor somebody from Chiyuv Misa. Therefore, since we have a suffix over here, it's interesting actually. The Achronim talk about I mean, what exactly is the chiddush? And of course, if there's a suffix, whether a person is Chiyuv Misa or not, what is the Rashbam telling us? And you would think otherwise. We're not sure. You would think otherwise. The Rashbam. You would think without what the Rashbam is telling us. That's what. Right, but the question is, what exactly is the chiddush in it? Obviously, and you would think if there's a suffix whether somebody is chayiv misa or not, you would think.
Apparently, for Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda,
because they don't have a suffix. They say for sure kinyan peres kinyan aguf or kinyan peres lav kinyan aguf. They're certain, and but according to Rabbi Yossi, who says himself he has a suffix, so there's an interesting chak then. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky brings in his sefer of Chidushim on Gemara Emes Yaakov. He says, imagine you have a person who has two such avodim. Imagine a person bought. Imagine you have the two avodim. One you bought from Reuven and one you bought from Shimon. Oh no, one. Sorry, one that you, one that you bought from Reuven and one that you sold to Shimon. Rather, yes. Both of them under the same arrangement that I'm keeping his work for the next 30 days. And now let's say he beat both of them and they both died. After Yoyma Yemayim. So now, if you're going to say that it's a suffix, fine, which one is considered? But Mamonafshach, one or the other of them is his Eved. Either Kinyan Peres or Kinyan Aguf, in which case the one Eved had, in which case he had Kinyan Peres in the one, he had Kinyan Aguf in the other. Mamonafshach, yours. Right, so
he has to be higher.
You would think, no matter what, he has to be higher. But that's what we're mentioning when we say stuff with Nefashas Lahakol, and when the Rashbam is adding the detail about Veshoftu Ha'edah V'Yitzilu Ha'edah, nonetheless, we might say, no, but the fact of the matter is, we can't, based in, can't for sure say, is he chayev on the grounds of having killed Eved A, or is he chayev on the grounds of having killed Eved B? We don't know. We'd have to know which Eved. And therefore,
not enough to say that there was a
Maisa Ritzicha over here, yeah. So you would have to say that, and that's it.
Because it's Nini Pashas.
Right.
What's the sefer called?
Emes Liakov, it's called, yeah. Rabbi Yaakov is not necessarily writing La Halacha. He's writing to explain over here, you know.
This concept comes up a lot whenever there's a topic. Oh, look, you know, can you do it both ways?
Right, so, yeah. So here we have, they talk about a lot of other interesting ideas in this connection also. Maybe you should say, I mean, there's a very simple reason. You can't kill somebody based on a suffix. You have a concept in various places in the Gemara called Hasra Suffix. If you have, you're giving somebody Hasra,
right,
where you're not certain if the thing is actually going to happen in a way that's also or not. then it's not a valid hasra.
Right, of course.
But the answer is over here. Like you said, after all, you have the Torah tells us loitzir tzach. No matter what, there was an issue of retzich over here. When they warn him, don't beat that eved, because if you do, you're committing loitzir tzach. One way or the other, whether the eved dies within 24 hours or after 24 hours, the guy was over on loitzir tzach. The Torah is the same. In one case, he's chayav misa, and in the other case, he's not.
Right, and all of this would have to be about hasra.
As we're talking about, obviously, you can't kill a person without hasra.
But it has to be valid hasra.
It can't be hasra suffix. That's the point. Right. But if they know that there's an actual reticha going to take place over here, which it is one way or the other, because even if the Eved survives Yoma Yomayim, it's still like Tirsa. The Torah pops you from punishment. That's all.
They both punch out the guy together.
So that's an issue that the Gemara talks about. So there you have an issue that the Gemara talks about. That's only Hilchos Shabbos. However, you do bring up a good point. In Sanhedrin, the Gemara talks about a similar concept over there. He cool asara bnei adam ba asara machlos. If you have 10 people who each take a baseball bat and hit the guy at the same, we may have mentioned it in Bava Kamma, I don't remember yet. So then the question is, which one is chayev? Is there any particular one that you can say? So we say b'vatachas, so b'zachas. There's a sugi over there in the seventh parak in the seventh race.
But they
were talking about a regular Ben Yisrael. They were not dealing with Yoyma Yemayim, so it's not an issue how long the guy lingers.
Right.
Here the question is how long. Yeah. Okay.
What if you hit the guy really hard and you know that he won't survive within 24 hours unless he has urgent medical care, but he will die automatically.
Right.
And so but it will be after the 24 hours.
Are you allowed to call? It's a good question. I would imagine that yes, but I don't really know.
And then if he knew that he was going to die later, and he pulled out the blood and stuff.
I hear. It could. I don't know. One would hope that the Rambam describes at the end of Hilchos Avodim, and he says that even though you're allowed to work in Eved Kanani B'Perech, and you're allowed to beat him, like we're saying over here, nevertheless, a Yid is a Rachmanim, and they know to treat Avodim better than that. So, yeah, one would hope it never actually happened. But what would be the din? I have no idea. It would be an interesting thing to look in the Chassidus and see what he says on it.
Good
question. Okay, onward. Now we have the fourth opinion. Rabbi Loza, I'm a shnein ainin b'din yoma yomayim. Rabbi Loza says the opposite of Rabbi Yosi. Neither one gets the yoma yomayim hetter. So they're both chayev. Even if the eved dies after the 24 hours. Zelafi shein etachta v'zelafi shein etkasloi. Because according to Rabbi Loza, you need both. You need that the eved has to be. You need that the eved has to be tachta. He has to be that he's working for you completely, and he has to be kasper, your ownership. And he's not either one. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar would say that both are chayiv. Neither one is considered the master of the eved in the sense of having the yoma yomayim ptur. And v'omer Rava, my time is Rabbi Elazar. What's Rabbi Elazar's reason why he said that? What happened to Sufik Nefashas Lahakol or whatever? Because the pasuk finishes off that if the eved survives for 24 hours, then he's not avenged, meaning that the master is not executed. Ki kaspayhu, because he is his, because the eved is his money. Now, what do we need the pasuk to give us that reason for? The reason is, or the Rashbam says, the pasuk could have said ki kesefhu, because he is money, he is an object of monetary value. By saying ki kaspayhu, it means it has to be dafka his full-fledged kesef. So therefore, if you're missing either the Paris or the Gur, then he's not Kasper. And therefore you'd be chayiv misa even if the Eved survived 24 hours. Well, by the same logic then, Rabbi Elazar uses the same svar, or not Rabbi Elazar, Amema rather uses the same svar to say by Nichsimalug, since you have a similar kind of thing as with this Eved over here, the husband owns the Paris and the wife owns the Gur. Even if both of them sell it, even if both of them sell it, you can't say it's a valid mecher. Just like Rav Elazar is saying that the eved doesn't really belong to either of them, and therefore neither one has the yoyma yemayim thing. Therefore, the same thing by the nixim alug, neither one can sell it, not individually, and not even jointly. And that would be what Amema is saying, that if the husband and wife together sold nixim alug, it doesn't work. That doesn't contradict them, because each one owns something, each one owns part of it, and neither one owns the whole thing. Whereas our Mishnah would be like the Chacham, would be like one of the other opinions in this Braisa, that as long as you have one or the other, then it's fine. So our Mishnah, when it implies that the husband is able to own, that the husband is able to own the Nichsim Alug, if he has a Raya to that effect, if he has Edom or Shtar, that would be like one of the other opinions, like Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Yehoshua.
Can we apply the Din of Chashis to the Din of Amenus?
Unless we have a reason otherwise, then yeah. I mean, Rav Elazar is learning it from the extra words in the pasuk over there, kikas b'hu. Yeah, and I guess the Gemara could have asked back that maybe only there because you have a zeirus hakasuv. But a Meimar apparently figures that what applies there can also apply here. I mean, the whole concept of nixim alug is that kind of did Rabbanan anyway.
Yeah.
And usually we find, call the tokun rabbanon kein deraisa tokun. When the chachamim make a takana, usually they make it similar to a parallel thing deraisa. Well, very well then. If you have a case over there of the eved, then that meimah might well say the chachamim modeled the concept of selling nixim alug on the concept of that. The halacha, by the way, is like Rav Elazar. So neither master in that case would have full ownership of the eved, and therefore both of them are chayiv. And yeah, when it comes to the nixim alug also, even if the husband and wife jointly sell it, it doesn't work.
Because they have to each one individually.
Each one individually has, because they'd have to own the whole thing together. Now that still doesn't mean though that in our Mishnah you couldn't still have that the wife chooses to sell the nixim alug to her own husband, and then the husband later on pulls out a shtar or edim or whatever who says that that he owns it. That's fine. We're talking about third parties though. Amema would say you can never sell it to them. Then the Mishnah continued. We said in the Mishnah that a man has no chazaka a man doesn't have chazaka in his wife's nechassim. So the question is, how could that be? So actually, it seems from the Rashbam, if you look in the Rashbam, he starts out v'kamatma, more or less opposite where we are, the Rashbam starts out v'kamatma gemara. So the gemara is asking, v'loyla ish chazaka v'nichse ishtoi. So in other words, it seems from the Rashbam that the printer has put over here the two dots by mistake. It's not really like a new topic. It's a continuation of what do you mean now that we established what it means that a husband might or might have chazaka or gaya on his wife's nechassim. How could you say that a husband should not have his wife chazaka on his wife's nechassim? Why not? Didn't Rav say that an eshesish does have to do a macha? Meaning if somebody goes and tries to make a chazaka on her nixim alug, then that person could conceivably establish a chazaka on it, and therefore she has to make a macha to prevent that chazaka from taking place. So, b'man, we have to talk about who is that other party who might be taking over the nixim alug, where she has to do a macha. Ilema ba'acher, are you talking about that it might be a third party, somebody else other than her husband? But didn't Rav say that you can't establish a chazaka on the nechassim of an eshes ish because she's able to say, okay, I didn't make a macha. I figured my husband will go and make a macha.
She can't, but there's
no need. Rav is saying, ein machzik in menichse eshes ish. Rav is saying two dins. Rav is saying two different dins. Number one, he's saying, on the one hand, eshes ish tzricha limchos. He's saying an eshes ish has to make a macha, and if no macha was made, then a chazaka can be established. On the other hand, Rav is saying that ein machzik in menichse eshes ish, that a third party cannot make a valid chazaka. That's what we have to figure out. El olav v'bal. Presumably then, Rav's first din must be talking about the husband himself, that conceivably the husband could possibly establish a chazaka on the wife's nechassim, and she would have to be moicha in order to prevent that chazaka from taking place. So what do you mean that a man can never have a chazaka on his wife's nechassim? It sounds like what we just said. But that, Loyla ish chazaka benichse ish, they mean that the husband can never have a chazaka on his wife's nechasim. Even if he comes years later and he says, I bought it, I lost my shire, et cetera, et cetera, we wouldn't accept it. Based on how we understand these two dinim of Rav, it sounds like no. It sounds like he could eventually have a chazaka if she wasn't moicha during the 3 years. Well, I mean, we use the two statements of Rav to clarify what the din is relating back to the Mishnah. Right, we're not really bringing the stira between Rav's two din, and we're using that in order to clarify it.
Also on those statements.
No, but we're using it's all part of the question. It's implicit in the question. Omar Rava Olam Babal. Okay, so Rava says, no, you are in fact talking about that, yes, you're talking about that when Rav says that you have to be moicha, we are talking about the husband, fine. So how does that fit with the Mishnah? The Mishnah is talking about a different kind of chazaka. Namely, the husband has the nichsa malug as far as parents. He doesn't own the karka itself. So if he were to go and start digging ditches or pits or other kinds of things to hold rainwater, caves, whatever, yeah, Meir has a cave, in the property, and the Rashbam adds the detail, this is not a property where normally boris would be dug. If it was, then those would be considered part of the paris of it, because he has the right to the paris. He has the right to anything, to any normal use of the karka, which includes those things. So suppose the husband goes and digs Bodas Shichin Umairis over there. Now, usually he doesn't have the right to do that. If he goes and does that, she should have been Moicha. If she doesn't, then he can establish a Chazaka.
Unless it's a common usage.
Well, that's what we're talking about. If it's a field that's not Asturiel of Bodas, right. It's her property. She's responsible to keep. She looks through the window. It's her property. It's her property. She's responsible to keep an eye somehow. Yeah. Okay. Besides, what you know, one day he comes home covered with mud, and she has to, you know. Fine. Okay, so that's the kind of case that Rava is talking about where she would have to be Moicha, and if she doesn't, then a Chazaka could be established. Our Mishnah is talking about the regular kind of Chazaka where he's claiming after 3 years that I own the Karka. That we won't believe. Okay. Question is, V'ha'omer Rav Nachman, omer Rav Avua, ein Chazaka l'nezakin, but didn't Rav Nachman tell us in the name of Rav Avua, ein Chazaka l'nezakin, that if a person is mazik somebody else, he doesn't have the ability to argue, look, I've been digging pits and whatever in it for the last 3 years. We talked about earlier in the parak the idea, in order for a chazaka to be valid, it has to be kedemachtiki inshi. It has to be that you're using the property in the normal way that people do. Well, if it's not normal in this kind of property to dig ditches and whatnot, then that can't be considered. You can't say that I established a chazaka through the fact that I'm causing a hezek over here and you weren't moicha. That's not considered a valid chazaka. So what are we saying?
The
nezek being the bodas shichin amiris in a field that's not usually made for that. The answer is no. Ema ein din chazaka l'nezakit. No, what it means is faket. It means that it means like this. A regular chazaka would take 3 years, but if you're establishing a chazaka through nezakin, then you don't even need the 3 years. That's what I'm not going to say. Faket. It's a cooler in that sense, because when it comes to just using the field and fine, you're using the paris and whatever for the next 3 years, fine, you can expect, like we said earlier in the paris. Hold on. When you have a regular kind of chazaka where a person squats in a field and uses the paris for the 3 years or whatever, we can say, fine, up to 3 years, you weren't bothering to be moicha. Once the guy is doing it for 3 years, if you weren't moicha during that time, it shows that you waived your rights or that you really sold it or whatever. But if the guy, Reb Nachman is telling us, if the other guy is causing the zokin in it, baris, shichin, amiris, no normal person is going to see that people are making a hezek in his karka and not protest right away. Therefore,
so he acquires chazaka immediately.
So therefore, if the other guy knows that these bodas shichin umairis are being dug and doesn't say anything about it, that's it. A chazaka is established immediately. So therefore, fine, the same idea then. As soon as the wife finds out that there are bodas shichin umairis being dug over here, she should have to make a macha immediately. And if she doesn't, it shows that in fact the karka was sold to her husband. As soon as she's able to get to Beis Din. Come on. So that's can explain. In other words, again, so far what we have is fine. The Mishnah is saying that if the husband comes after 3, 4, whatever it is, years, and says, I bought this karka, but I lost the shtar, that doesn't mean anything. He'd have to have a raya. On the other hand, if we see him digging ditches and whatnot in the thing, and she didn't protest, then he has a chazaka. That's what we would be saying.
Everybody agrees on that.
Well, or that's one way of explaining what Rav Nachman says. He boys same, or another possibility. What this that Rav Nachman is saying that ain chazaka v'nezakin doesn't mean any kind of nezakin. Lav itman Allah. Don't you know that there was said on that? We learned back in the second parak that that what it means is like this. Usually, you do need chazaka of 3 years. We're not talking about when Rav Nachman is saying ain chazaka v'nezakin. He's not talking about the question of chazaka on somebody else's property. He's talking about the kind of chazaka where, for example, I have a chaser, or I have even my own house. There's certain things where if I do them in my house or in my chaser or whatever adjacent to yours, you have the right to protest that it's bothering you and to make me put up a fence or otherwise remove my thing. We heard the whole much of the second paragraph was on that topic. However, if a person is arguing that I've been doing this for a long time and you never protested, then that establishes a chazaka. It's machlokes rishonim whether in that case you need 3 years or not. But the other guy has the ability to argue in chazaka v'nezakin with certain kinds of nezakin that no matter what, eventually a person can't take them long term. Ramari Amar B'Kutra, Ramari says it's talking about smoke. And Tosfos explained over there doesn't just mean any smoke. It means like you have a kiln over there, like for burning lime or whatever, where it makes a huge amount of smoke. There's never a chazaka. Even if I've had that in my house or my chotzer or whatever for 10 years and you never tested, you still always at any point have the ability to go to Beis Din and say, I can't take it anymore. And Rav Zvid Amar Beis HaKisa. Yeah. And Rav Zvid Amar Beis HaKisa. Rav Zvid says that it applies to a Beis HaKisa. Same idea. What?
Someone's trying to...
So I have... What we're saying, this is a different kind of chazaka. I mentioned when we started learning the parak, I don't remember if you were here, that there's like four or five different kinds of chazaka. There's at least 4 different kinds of chazaka in Gemara terminology. Most of this parak, we've been talking about chazaka of 3 years. Now we're talking about a chazaka of, like this. I have a chazaka, for example, that all these years I've been allowed to have, let's say, for example, that I have a store in my house and people are always coming and going. You never protested, so therefore I've established that I'm able to continue doing that. If you were to come and say one day it's too much, the noise or the crowds or whatever is too much, tough luck. We already established that I'm allowed to do it. But Rav Mari and Rav Zvid are telling us there are exceptions to that. If I have a kiln in my house where I'm burning limestone to make lime, for example, where it makes a huge amount of smoke, the Pasuk uses it, and then by Matan Torah, the Pasuk uses it as a metaphor for the smoke on Har Sinai. The Har Sinai Oshan Kula. Rashi actually not by Matan Torah, by Sdom Ba'amora, for example, says Vehina Ola Kitera Kibshan, that came up like the smoke of a kiln, that kind of heavy, thick smoke. The guy can always, even years later, wake up one morning and say, you know what, I can't take it anymore. And then to his neighbor, and not chazaka on my property, but chazaka on your property that you don't have the right to keep on causing me that headache. Or Beis HaKisa, same idea. I can't take the smell and the whatnot.
The tanning factory?
Yeah. Sort of tanning, we said in the second paragraph, we should be honest. That's about the city for that reason. But yeah, in other words, So when Rav Nachman is telling us in chazaka v'nezakin, not necessarily. First, we assume that it meant that it does have to do with chazaka of 3 years. That if I make a chazaka via nezakin on a piece of property and you weren't moicha right away, then it means that I've actually bought it. That I have an immediate chazaka. Now we're saying that Rav Nachman is saying something about a completely different kind of chazaka, not anything that's relevant to our sugya over here.
Environmental, so to speak.
Yes, so therefore, it has nothing to do with what Rav is telling us. Rav Yosef Amar La'olam Ba'acha, Rav Yosef gives yet another answer, how we end for our Mishnah with what Rav is saying, where again, our Mishnah is saying that the man can never have a chazaka of 3 years on his wife's nechasim, but Rav says that she has to be moicha, and if not, he can establish chazaka.
That's
so we had 2 answers so far. that one we're talking about, the husband, we said the husband is digging Boris Shechinomiris. No, one answer we have that Rava is saying that the husband is digging Boris Shechinomiris. Now we have another answer, Rabbi Yosef Amar, La'olam Ba'acher. No, we are actually talking about when Rav says that the woman has to be Moicha, otherwise the Chazaka is established. We are talking about third party. We're talking about a scenario like this. Suppose that the husband sold the nechassim to a third party while he was still alive. The guy ended up starting his chazaka while the husband was alive, and then he had furthermore 3 years after the husband died. So during the time when her husband is alive, fine, she can argue, I figured my husband is going to be moicha, because after all, he gets the payrus of it anyway. Or maybe that he only sold the payrus, he didn't sell the goof, because he himself doesn't own the goof, how could he sell it? But if the guy continues to have it for 3 years after the husband dies, at that point, sometime during those 3 years, she should be making a macha. She should be making a macha, and he didn't. Well, that's, we have to say that. Nigger di boy, and the reason is why it works is because he has a nigger. Nigger di boy amalei, they don't care. Nigger di boy amalei anoz vintaminach. He has a nigger. He could have argued that I bought it directly from you, and she wouldn't have a way to refute him. Yeah. Ki amalei nami at zvintalei v'zabnani at zvintalei v'zabnani ali. Therefore, if he wants to argue that I bought it validly from your husband because you sold him the goof while he was alive, and then he turned around and sold the goof and the payrus to me, that works. Nehaman, then we believe him. That's why. Yeah. Well, you're asking why isn't it obvious? The reason it's not obvious because it requires that detail. If the husband were to sell it without first having bought the goof, that doesn't work. He didn't own the goof. How can the other guy have it? It'd be chazaka sheini matayna. Once the guy has the ability to argue that I bought the goof from you, or that I bought the goof from your husband, who you sold it to him first, that's a chazaka sheyesh matayna. Okay, the Gemara finishes off. Gufa, getting back to what we just said, Amar Rab ein machzikin minichse eshes ish, that Rab had said you're not able to establish a chazaka over the nechassim of an eshes ish because we said she figures that her husband would be melcha. The dayanei goyla omu machzikin. However, the dayanei goyla, meaning Shmuel and Karna, the dayanei goyla means Bavel, specifically means Nahauda, they were the great chachamim in Nahauda, they hold it is possible to make such a chazaka. She should have been melcha. Okay, Amar Rab halacha g'dayanei goyla. So Rav one time says the halacha is like the Dayanei Goyla.
That she
should have been expected to make a macha, and therefore chazaka can be established. Omrulei Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi l'Rav hodabei ma'am b'shvayte. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi say to Rav, did you change your mind before you said you can't establish a chazaka, meaning she doesn't have to make a macha? Now you're saying that, yeah. Omrulehu mistabra amri kidir Rav Yosef. So he says, no. What I meant is, it makes sense to say, like Dayanei Goyla, in a case like what Rav Yosef described, where somebody else, where somebody else says that he bought it from the husband while he was alive and now had chazaka after he died, the same nigger that we just said. Now, Rav lives a couple of generations. Rav lives a couple of generations before Rabbi Yosef, so he's not literally saying like Rabbi Yosef. He means he described the scenario that later on Rabbi Yosef is described in our Gemara. But in such a scenario, Rav is saying, I would agree with Dayanei Goyla. Otherwise, yes. Otherwise, she has the right. If her husband's still alive and chazaka wasn't established while he was alive, she can say, I expected my husband was going to be my son.